Okay, let's see what you came up with. We have a sheet where we have some discussion things that I put for you to kind of think through. Let's talk about the first one. You've got two young ones. We could have put four. I mean, after two, it's just kind of more, okay? So you got your youngest one, little bitty one in the basket. You got your toddler over here, and they throw a huge temper tantrum, or we call them fits, in the middle of the grocery store. What do you feel as a parent? You're going along, you've got to get the groceries, you got this little baby, you got to go change her diaper. What do you feel when she or he pulls, I would say she because we only had girls, so I'm sure boys never do that. But what do you do when your child does something like that in a public setting and you, what do you do? What do you feel, first of all? What do you feel? Embarrassed? Yeah. What? Frustrated? Yeah. What do you think all the people looking at you are thinking?
They've been there.
Yeah, they've been there. That's the truth. They've been there. What do you tend to feel they're thinking? How bad of a parent can you be? You have no control. You feel embarrassed. You feel, you know, if we use the language of love and respect, you feel disrespected. You know, I mean, it's not like you've never given them a cookie, but they want what they want when they want it, and so all of a sudden they're using that as an opportunity to make their demand. So what would you do? What have you either done or seen done that you thought worked or didn't work? Somebody at your table, what'd y'all talk about? Just go ahead.
A lot of times we'll ignore it, but I mean, now this is a scenario, you know, kid keeps screaming. Sometimes we'll either leave the store or go to the bathroom for an attitude adjustment.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to be careful in the public setting now, don't you? Because of Child Protective Services, and you get reported and all that. If you're a paddler or spanker, or our middle daughter, they call their little helper Mr. Sad Man, and so they ask, "Do we need to get Mr. Sad Man out?" But you can't do that out in public, so because our society has changed and you can find your children taken away from you depending on what somebody interpreted you as doing. So you might have to take them to an attitude adjustment. Somebody back there said you might ignore it. So how? What would ignoring it look like? Just leave them in this aisle and walk on to the next aisle? You've done it, just walked out and left them, I mean walked down the next aisle, and so finally they come? Okay. Somebody else, what have you seen that didn't work?
I didn't.
Yeah, give them a cookie. Yeah.
That's what I see the majority of the time.
Say that again.
Working in retail, that's what I see most of the time when children throw a fit that the parents just give it to them.
Just give them what they want. Just to.
That's what I see.
Yeah. Yeah. So the kids learn at an early age that they can hold you emotionally hostage out in public, and then they're hoping that by the time you get home, you forget about it. Okay, let's go to number two. The 12-year-old daughter wants to go to the mall and just walk around. If you've never had a 12-year-old daughter in Wichita Falls, almost all of them have wanted to go to the mall and walk around. And sometimes that's not the healthiest place for them. You tell them and you don't think that's a good place. And then after a lot of intensification where she tries to lawyer you into her perspective, she says, "You're the worst parent ever. You're so strict. Melanie's mom lets her." So what do you say? How do you handle? First of all, what do you feel?
What do you say this to me pretty regularly? That not that I'm the worst parent, but you're so mean. Uh-huh. You're stricter than anybody else's parent. And I usually just tell them that at least I'm doing the job that God sent me to do.
Yeah.
And that's not to be your best friend. It's to be your mom. And
okay.
To teach you.
Now, if you didn't hear what Christian said that when that happens in her world, she says, "Well, you know, my goal is not to be your friend, but to be your mom, and I'm here to be the best mom God can help me to be." Let me ask you, Christian, when you give them that perspective, that automatically helps them get better, right?
No, but they don't have a whole lot to say to that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're not going to argue with God.
Yeah.
Now, my younger one might, but my older one won't.
Okay.
So, I mean, it really just kind of ends the discussion, and, you know, I try to be empathetic because I'm really mad, and then I can't be empathetic.
Yeah.
But I say, I know that it probably feels bad that you don't get to go to the movies like all your friends do or whatever.
Yeah.
That's just not the rule at our house.
Okay, good. Somebody else. How do you feel? What do you do? What have you seen that works? What doesn't work? Tiffany?
I'm going to be in big trouble when these boys grow up because that would hurt my feelings so bad. And so right now I just have a 1-year-old and a little boy turned 5, so it's not at that stage yet. And I don't really know how I would react.
Well, your one that's turned 5 is doing pretty well because we had one that when she was 3 or 4, decided that we were bad parents and she wanted to go live somewhere else. And so Becca packed up her bag that night, put her out on the front porch with her little bag, turned off the light, shut the door. She stood out there for about how long, Becca?
Maybe 10, maybe 5 minutes.
Maybe 5 minutes. Knock, 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 knock. She decided that maybe she would stay at our house another night. And Becca, remind me how you handled that?
Well, I don't remember after that. I remember she came back in.
But I think there was some discussion about, you sure you want to live here? And, you know, yeah. But anyway, so some things, the question is, or the issue is, this mom and daughter are getting into power struggles. And I'm going to tell you, if you haven't gotten into the preteen, teen thing yet, there are power struggles waiting to happen. Because they want to tell you what's what and who's who. And it's not going to be what you want them to tell. And it's funny because in this next scenario, the 16-year-old boy, up until about the age of 10 or so, they just think you're the most wonderful person on the face of the earth. And then when they get to be about 13 or 14... they're convinced you're about as stupid as they come. And how do you deal with them? How do you respond to that? How do you process that? Let's look at the last one. You have a 16-year-old son. He's developed a little bit of a tood, the latitude. He was a model kid, but last few years you've noticed his disrespect and withdrawnness. When you remind him to pick up his room or do some other chore or responsibility, he usually mutters halfway under his breath, whatever. Now, he may eventually do it or not. When you tell him to not be disrespectful, he mutters again, whatever. How do you deal with a teenage boy that's acting disrespectful and feeling withdrawn?
Don't leave marks.
Don't leave marks.
I'm nowhere near that with my kids, but I know what my mom did. Grab whatever was close, and I'd pick myself up off the floor.
And
you learned real quick. You had to get a lot quieter when you said it. Yeah. You still said it. Yeah. Around. You're still going to say you just got quieter or got all the way to your room before you said it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They're still going to say it.
Yeah.
I mean, really, no matter what you do, they're going to say it.
Well, yeah. It's like with the saying, you know, you're the worst parent ever. I think my response to that's going to be thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Doing
my job.
Yeah. The other thing that they'll say, and this will, a lot of times I think will hurt the ladies more than it will the guys, is they'll look at you. Let me ask you, when a child gets angry at you because you've not catered to their whim or whatever, what's one of the first things they'll say? You don't love me. I think they're speaking out of their heart. Now, I don't think they're right. I don't think that they're obviously correct, but their perception is, if you were the kind of parent I want you to be, then you would be loving, and loving is defined by doing what I want you to do, or letting me do what I want to do. And whenever a child throws a temper tantrum in the middle of the store, or gives you grief about a decision that you've made that you're not going to let them pursue a certain path because you don't think it's best for them, and they rant and rave, what do you tend to say? Don't you dare what? Disrespect me. Dr. Eggers, when he developed this for families, realized that's what is the core of a lot of the family arguments. Kids need to feel loved. Parents need to feel respected. What issues we tend to deal with are the love-respect issues. We've talked about it in terms of how a woman wants to feel unconditional love, a man wants to feel respected. Without love, she doesn't respond with respect. Without respect, he doesn't respond with love. That's the crazy cycle of marriage. But when you think about how do we implement that in the home, it's similar. There's a little difference because we're the adults and they're the children. But we want to process through that. Take your study guide. I've left some blanks for you to fill in, and I'm going to fill those in for you from the overhead. Let's go foundational truth number one. Here's the problem with being in a Christian community, is a lot of you, one of the reasons I have you do these discussions at the table is to realize that you're not in the boat alone. Some people feel like when they look across this family, across the room of a church or of a community of faith, they see that other family over there as being perfect, of having all of their stuff together, of being that the kids never give them any problems, the parents are in love with each other, and they have a wonderful family. The truth is, there are no perfect parents. They're no perfect children, and they're no perfect families. And we are all flawed people who live with other flawed people. A couple of verses that I've given you in your notes. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. The truth is, as acute as that little six-month-old is, he's a little sinner. And eventually that sinner is going to show up. And the one that's holding him and admiring him is a big sinner. And that sin's going to show up. If you're under the illusion that somehow you can have a perfect family, whatever that means, you're setting yourself up for huge disappointment. What you can do is parent and love well. And what they can do is learn to respect well. But not perfectly. Foundational truth number two. Every family takes a spin on the crazy cycle. Every family. Oh, hold on, I'll get it over. Oh, I'm sorry, let me read the verses. For all of sin fall short of the glory of God. What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and you do not have, so you commit murder, or at least feel like it. And you're envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives that you may spend it on your pleasures. And the problem is that we want what we want. And when that kid's laying on the floor of the grocery store and we're just enraged with them, we want them to give us some respect. And when they're on the floor throwing that tantrum, they want us to give them Oreos. And we want what we want, and a war ensues. And the truth is that we're flawed people. There's no perfect parents, no perfect children. We're flawed people and we live with other flawed people. Foundational truth number two. I don't know why this screen is shaking like that. But foundational truth number two. Every family takes a spin on the crazy cycle. Challenge is not to avoid getting on the crazy cycle, but taking steps to get off of it. You're going to hit the crazy cycle. They're going to be disrespectful. You can apply everything we're going to talk about in these next 12 weeks, and your kids are going to do something that feels really disrespectful. Or you're going to have to do something that really feels unloving to them. Or you may do something in a moment of anger, in a moment of frustration, in a moment of whatever. Everybody's going to take that spin. So when you find yourself on that, the issue isn't to beat yourself up, oh, we're on the crazy cycle, we're failing. No. The question is, how do we take a step off? How can we move back to what we'll call later the energizing cycle? How can we do that? Number three, foundational truth number three. Kids need love. Parents need respect. Again, it's illustrated by what children say when they don't feel like they're getting what they want, or maybe the parent actually isn't acting in a very loving way. They say, you don't love me. Titus, when he talked to the young mother, or Paul admonishing Titus to teach young women. He said, teach the that they admonish the young women to love their husbands and to love their children. If you want to make yourself a little note about that word love, what is the word we typically think about when we tell somebody, I love you? What's the word that we think about from Greek language? Any of you that are familiar with the different uses of Greek words to portray love? If we talk about love in a marriage setting, what kind of love is the husband supposed to have for his wife? We call that agape love, which is what kind of love? Unconditional, no matter what. Guess what this word is not? This word is not agape love. I don't think deep down that unless you're really an evil parent, that most kids don't think at some core level you love them, agape. Guess what this word is? There are three words primarily in the Greek language for love. Agape, agapao, means to love unconditionally, to love for the best for the individual. Eros, which is a sensual, sexual kind of love. This word is the word where we get our word Philadelphia from. Philadelphos. It's that kind of love that we talk about, friendship love. See, you're going to see sometimes in your relationship with your kids that you agape them, but you don't phileo them very much at that moment. And what they're wanting to know is, do you love me with that kind of love? Notice that he says here that you admonish. And it's not just the young women. We'll see that there's men. The fathers are addressed in the next verse. How to love their husbands. How to be a friend to their husbands. Woman's never called to agape love her husband. I think that comes naturally. But how do you pull alongside and become a friend, an ally? It's the same with children. And it's the same for fathers too. Notice in verse 6, or chapter Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training, the admonition of the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. If you take all of the instruction, kids want to know that their parents love them in a connected, reciprocal kind of relationship. Because I think every parent, again, unless you've just gotten a bad heart, loves their kid unconditionally. But do you communicate you value them and that you are for them, that you're for their best, that you're on their team? Do you communicate that to them? So that's really the kind of what we're going to be working through. Somebody had their hand up over here a minute ago. Tiffany?
Could you spell that?
P-H-I-L-E-O. P-H-I-L-E-O. Agape. A-G-A-P-E. Anybody else? Look at the, and then obviously we all are familiar with this. If you've been in church much, maybe if you haven't, this is maybe new to you, but in Exodus 20 verse 12, one of the Ten Commandments is honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. So God has designed us and wired us that children respect their parents. That's what they're called to do. Now, and parents are called to love their children. Why do you think God put Exodus 20, 12, and if we were to look back in Ephesians 6, in the first part, it talks about, it kind of reiterates that same command, and we see it in numerous places. Why does God tell children to do that? Why does He tell them to do that? Here's why I think, and you can debate, we'd be glad to interact with you about it. I think because it's not natural. I think the reason He doesn't say, wives, agape, love your husband, is because He doesn't have to command them to do that. But wives, respect your husband. Sometimes that's a little harder. Husbands, love your wives. Never tells him to respect her so much as to love her unconditionally and connect with her in a way that she knows she's safe with you. I think what He commands us to do is to do what isn't necessarily natural because He wants us to depend upon Him to do it. He wants us to behave in a way. If He says don't lie, why does He tell us to not lie? Because our propensity and our fallen self is to do what? To not tell the truth. Or to tell the truth in such a way that it only benefits us and it doesn't really, it's not really the truth. So whenever we see a command like that, we say, well, why is that? There's another deeper reason, and I believe the reason is because He is a Father. And if we can help our children relate to us in a respectful manner, then we can help them relate to other authorities in a respectful manner. He's given us the responsibility as parents to at least promote that in them. And so we have to kind of help them know how to do that and understand that they're probably going to need some help. Well, let me just take a minute here to stop. And here's another challenge that you're going to have, or that you may have, or that you may already have. Does anybody in here have a really sweet, compliant child? Yeah. Does anybody in here have a brother or sister that came from the same gene pool that is just the polar opposite? Yeah. And you wonder, what in the world happened to this one? We had two bookends that were spirited. Wanted to do things their way. The middle sister was a compliant, we would say sweet, obedient, blessing from God. The two bookend sisters despised her. At times. Now they loved her, but they came up with a name for her. Courtney was the Jesus child. Courtney, you're just the Jesus child. And the problem that we get into is that we want our kids to be like that kid. And if we don't have one of those in our family, guess what we kind of do? Is we point out to somebody in another family, why can't you be like him? Why can't you be like, oh, and his answer is, because I'm not him. I'm not her. I'm me. Sometimes when we use that comparison thing, guess what we tell kids? Guess what the subtle message of comparing them to their older brother or sister is? Somebody, you're shaking your head. Go ahead. What are we telling them? Yeah, you're not good enough. You don't measure up. You need to be different. Let me ask you, does that feel loving? No. And sometimes we say that because we just want a little peace. We just want a little, settle, just give us an hour, give us a day, give us a week, give us something. And so if you have a child that is compliant and a child that seems to be sweet, enjoy it, but realize that may not be the norm for every child you have. I'm amazed at growing up in our family how different our three daughters are. They're all great girls. They're all sweet. They're all caring, but they are different. And if you try to force the others into the mold of your favorite, you will send a very damaging message. The question is, how can you parent those that are not as compliant and loving and responsive in a way that they will know that you love them just in the same way that you love the other ones? The whole comparison thing gets to be a real problem. Turn your page and look at foundational truth. Oh, let me see here. Already read these for you. Let's look at truth number four. A parent's ability to decode the children's behavior and the ability to diffuse the contention goes a long way to getting off the crazy cycle. Next couple of weeks, we're going to look at what it means to decode. And we're going to try to understand how do we decode? How do we diffuse? Because we make some assumptions when we hear things or see things in children that may not necessarily be true. And so we have to kind of understand and think through their grid, understand what they're like, understand the gender differences of how the little girls, a lot of times, will be so verbal by the age of 2, and you may have a little boy that doesn't speak till he's 4. And, you know, we have a grandson, and I was really concerned that he wasn't going to be very verbal. And we're a very verbal family. We all talk. And we prayed, that little boy, and about the age of 3, something flipped. Now we're praying that God would maybe let him not talk quite so much, because he's... I mean, you've never seen a kid talk more than that kid. But they're different. And so a parent's ability to decode the child's behavior. And you say, Reggie, what do you mean decode? I mean, think about what the child needs, why they might be behaving the way they're behaving, not just knee-jerk react, and then how can you diffuse the situation? What are some skills and some tools that you may not be implementing now that can give you a greater opportunity to diffuse the thing? Look at Proverbs 17:14. It says, the beginning of strife is like the releasing of water. Once that flood starts, it's hard to stop. Therefore, stop contention before a quarrel starts. Guess whose responsibility in the family it is to stop the contention? It's yours. In a power struggle, guess whose responsibility it is to take the first step? It's yours. Would you just write beside that Proverbs 17:4 this phrase, I am the adult. Okay? Sometimes our behavior as parents gets a little childlike. We begin to try to win the argument. Well, like old Dr. Phil would say, how's that working for you? We try to convince them with all of our wisdom. Doesn't work. I'm the adult. I have the responsibility to look beyond the immediate, to look beyond whatever I'm feeling in terms of disrespect, and begin to ask some questions. Are they really intending to disrespect me? Are they really? Is that really where they're coming from? And I want to. We'll get into this later, but you can jot this down. I don't think your kid wakes up in the morning. Now, I know some of y'all are going to want to debate this. I don't think your kid wakes up in the morning and says, how can we really drive Mom crazy today? How can we really see old Dad twist off and blow his top? They never wake up thinking that. Now, what they do, you know, drives Mom crazy, and what they do causes Dad to blow his top. But I don't think they're doing it intentionally. So we'll use this phrase and we'll develop it a lot more. Your kids basically have a good heart. They're not trying to drive you nuts. They may be driving you nuts, but they're not trying to. There are other things that are going on, and that's why we have to decode. And then how can we diffuse? We'll talk about that. But just kind of keep that verse in mind. Stop the contention before a quarrel starts. If you want to put another little thing, we're going to talk about the importance of taking a time out. Not just for them, but a time out for you. If things are getting ramped up, it may just be say, hey, this is getting to a level right now where it's not going to be good. We're going to take a time out. I'm going to go in back in here and you go do whatever you need to do, and we'll get together in just a little bit to process it. But sometimes a well-planned timeout gives everybody a chance to cool down, and then we can kind of decode, diffuse, etc. That's also a good thing in marriage conversations. Sometimes you may have a kid that's not very good at talking immediately. You may have a mate that's not very good talking it through. They may have to think it through before they talk it through. And sometimes you may need to understand, okay, I need to give some time for me to think it through, but they need some time to cool down, they need to think it through, and then we'll come back and we'll talk it through. Now I'm a talker through-er. Okay, let's sit down, let's talk. Sometimes they don't want to talk. Sometimes they're not ready to talk. Sometimes you need to give them a chance to kind of process what's going on. If you're a talker through-er, what you want is right now some resolution. Let's get this thing through. Let's get it, let's move on. Sometimes you need to give them a little time to get there. You may need to do that with your mate if you're the talker through-er. They may be the thinker through-er. They may not know what they think right now. What I've learned about talker through-ers and thinker through-ers is the talker through-er doesn't care what they say. Because they're going to say it enough until finally they get it. Oh yeah, that's what I think. So they may say a bunch of things before they get to the point. Oh yeah, that sounds right. Whereas the thinker through-er doesn't want to say something they have to take back. They want to say it right the first time. Talker through-er doesn't care. We're just going to talk. And eventually we'll get to the point. Eventually we'll get to what we agree on. Now, the problem is if you have two talker throughers, you may be up all night, okay? If you have two thinker throughers, you may not talk enough. But anyway, so how to decode and diffuse. We're gonna talk about that a lot more. Foundational truth, number five, is a wise parent will learn to distinguish between a child being defiant and a child acting childishly. Of course, what's the classic illustration of that in a home around a table? Kid does what at the table? Spills the milk. Is that being defiant? Or is that being childish? But sometimes we respond to childish behavior and treat it like it's defiance. And when we respond to childish behavior and treat it like it's defiance, guess what message the kid gets? You really don't like me very much, do you? I never can do anything right. I never seem to... Now, they don't say that when they're three, but when that kind of response to childishness happens, they start to learn that it's about the behavior more than about their heart. If you only parent to get your kid to act a certain way, well, they'll do it in your presence. But you have no guarantee of what they'll do when they walk out of your home, when they're not with you. So what we want to appeal to is their heart. And if we treat childishness as childish, in a childish way, and we really do address defiance when it's real defiance in a healthy way, then we have a greater opportunity of them knowing that we're for them and we want their heart to be in a good place. And even though they said that and it made me feel this way, I know that that's not what at the deepest part of your heart you want to do. And you begin to learn how to process that. But you have to. Does anybody else have an example of the difference between defiance and childish behavior? Anybody else have an illustration of that?
Breaking toys.
Breaking toys? Yeah.
What happens in our house is the crazy morning rush when everybody has to get out and the little one it takes her longer to get her things the way she wants them, and she's trying to get them, but when just like get the car, but I haven't got it. It's not intentionally being defiant, it's that it takes her longer to do it because she's little and doesn't do it as quickly.
Right.
But
yeah.
It feels like defiance when you got 5 minutes after kids dropped off.
Can I hear the rest of the mom say amen? Yeah. We all have a kid. And we all have a kid that's slower than the others. I mean, not slower mentally necessarily, but just maybe slower mentally, but slower in their behavior. I mean, you've got one kid that all they need is 5 minutes. And they will get dressed. They'll have their cereal bar or whatever you're giving them. They'll be in the car and they'll be ready to go. And that other one needs 30 minutes. or more. And that's when you say, not wisely, why can't you be like your brother? Well, I'm trying. I just get my stuff together, you know. Okay, great. Those are both great illustrations. Kids break toys. You know, there may be a time when a child gets mad and breaks a toy and does it to defy you. But a lot of times they just are tough on stuff. You know, if you don't want them playing with the model airplane because they're going to break it, then don't let them have it. Give them something that doesn't matter if they break it. Or something that you can super glue back together. I love this passage in 1 Corinthians 13:11. It says, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I acted as I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. Guess what? Your child's going to act childishly. They're going to not understand because they're still a child. One of the things that I think is, and it kind of depends, but if you grew up in a home where everybody was expected to always act like an adult, then you may feel the pressure to make your child into a little adult and not help them have the freedom to be the child that they are. I think that's a pressure that we have, especially sometimes in some of our different circles that we live in. We want our child to appear to be or to be more mature than they actually are. And I think it's okay for them to be children. I didn't put this verse down, but remember whenever the disciples had a big crowd and people were bringing the little children to Jesus to bless them. And they wanted to keep the children away. Remember what Jesus says? Don't hinder the little children from coming for me. He was comfortable with children. And children don't always act maturely. I think sometimes we interpret immature behavior as defiant or disrespectful behavior. Sometimes it can be. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just childish. They just haven't grown up yet. And that's okay. Notice the difference. Proverbs 19:26. He who mistreats his father and chases away his mother is a son who causes shame and brings reproach. That's defiance. The one that just doesn't have any kind of appropriate, healthy respect for his dad or his mom. We're going to talk a lot about that in the weeks ahead. Truth number 6. What we learn, what we will learn, is not a formula. It's not a formula to fix our children, but a path to promote positive energy and harmony in the home. Some of us have the idea that children are given to us as a problem to fix. Does anybody have their? But anybody bring their Bible? Anybody have a Bible? Chris, would you look up Psalm 127 for me, please? It's not a formula to fix our children, but a path to promote positive energy and harmony in the home. Just start reading at the beginning of the passage.
127. Mm-hmm. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain. Who built it?
Okay, stop right there. I'm going to stop as you go on. I'll be rude. It's part of what I do best. Okay. Unless who builds the house?
Lord.
Yeah. I want to tell you, I appreciate Dr. James Dobson. I appreciate Focus on the Family. But I think that there can be in the Christian community an innate, hidden, subtle pressure for you to build the home. You have a responsibility, absolutely. What does that verse say, the first part of it again, Chris?
Unless the Lord builds the house.
They do what?
They labor in vain who build it.
Yeah. There's a sense in which if your home's going to be the best that it can be. Somebody bigger than you is going to have to take your efforts and use them and bless them. It doesn't mean you don't have responsibility. It doesn't mean they don't have responsibility. But unless the Lord builds the house. I believe the psalmist is looking at the reality that parenting is beyond our natural ability. Now, all of you moms have that maternal care. All of you dads have that sense of wanting your kids to do things the right way for the right reasons. But the ability to change hearts, the ability to guide young lives, ultimately comes from the Lord. Okay, keep reading.
Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he gives his beloved sleep.
Okay, let's stop there. He gives his beloved sleep. How many of y'all are just exhausted with parenting? Would anybody here agree that parenting is one of the most exhausting things you can do? I mean, that's not what you thought when you got married. We're going to get married and we're going to have a family. And the other side of it is, and you're hardly ever going to sleep, and you're going to get real crotchety, and you're going to be losing your temper, and those little buggers are going to drive you crazy. But we're going to have a family. Now, children are a gift from the Lord. Fruit of the womb is a reward. But when we try to, you know when we feel exhausted and out of gas and unable to carry on? So when we take all the responsibility on us, parenting is a partnership between you, and if you're married, your mate, and the Lord, with Him having to do the heavy lifting. If you're a single parent, then it's a relationship between you and the Lord, where you trust Him to do the heavy lifting and you do the loving things to try to direct your kids in a way that would show their good character. So it's vain for you to rise up early. It's vain for you to stay up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, because He gives to His beloved even in His sleep. Now, here's the real thing. My question for you is, do you believe that? He wants to give to you in ways that you could never dream, but you could ask. Doesn't mean you don't take your responsibility. We're going to look at a lot of things. Remember, we said you're the parent. But for Him to take those efforts of yours and somehow reach into the heart of your kids and direct them and reassure them of that they're loved and cared for, and give them a secure environment to blossom to be whatever it is God's designed them to be. Keep reading, please.
Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has a quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate.
Okay, children are a gift from the Lord. The problem is that we think once He gives them to us, we want to hold on to them. Do you know what God intends for children to do once they're in your family? Eventually do what? And?
Leave.
And sometimes we don't want them to leave because we didn't get everything done. We didn't get everything addressed. I remember one of the saddest days of my life was when we dropped our oldest one off at A&M. I didn't feel like I'd gotten everything done that I needed to get done. I spent the next 2.5-3 weeks basically depressed in bed. You know why? Because I thought that gift was mine. And what he was saying is, Reggie, you got to let her go and trust that she'll come back. What does he say about children? They are like what? Arrows? Where? In the hand of a warrior? What do warriors do with arrows? They don't sit there and tell their enemy, look at this wonderful thing of arrows I have. I have got this wonderful group of arrows. And you know, no. They take them and they send them toward a target. What we want to help you do in the next 12 weeks is understand how you can effectively send your kids God's way as you trust Him for some new skills, or maybe remind you of some skills you knew and maybe have gotten in a bad habit, to help you communicate to them how much you love them, address their foolishness, and at the same time let them know what you see that's valuable in them. Because what he wants you to do is to realize you don't get to hold on to them forever. They're arrows. I want you to send them in a direction. So, the last, let's see here. I've forgotten, lost my clicker. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior, so were the clickers of one's youth. Let's see. Here we go. Notice the verse I have on the bottom of your last point. Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. If we could just take that word brethren, it doesn't mean this in the Hebrew, but if we could just put this would be the desire of your heart. Behold, how good and pleasant it is for families to dwell together in unity. Now, I don't know where y'all are. There were times in our family journey where, gosh, it was great. And then there were times where unity wasn't a part of the experience. But for there to be unity, we have to realize that He's the one that needs to build the house. We have to together trust Him to be the one who builds the house. Because unless the Lord builds a house, they labor in vain. We have to acknowledge that He's the one who does. And what He wants to do is to give us a greater experience of that kind of unity, that kind of oneness, that kind of interaction with each other. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the family crazy cycle. This is the family crazy cycle. You can kind of look at it on your notes. Without love, if a child doesn't sense that they're unconditionally loved, and let me just say right here, if you want to write a little note up about that, there are going to be times when you're doing a loving thing for them and they're not going to feel it. Okay? You're going to be doing something for them that's very loving, but they're not going to feel like it's love. And that's why you will have to help them understand why that's a loving thing. And even when you explain it to them, guess what? They may still not understand it. But without love, when they're not being loved with that kind of phileo type love, a child reacts without respect. In other words, they go for the jugular. They know what you want. And they will take and wait for the most inopportune moment, when it will be most embarrassing to you, to express that. Without love, a child reacts without respect. You see, the question kind of becomes this. Is your desire for your family to do what's right, or for your family to do what's loving? I'm afraid in Christian communities, we think, well, we want to do what's right. We're going to teach our kid what's right. We want them to do what's right. Okay, that's good. 1 Corinthians 13 says, though I speak with the tongue of men and angels, but don't do it right. No, that's not how it goes. If I give all my possessions to feed the poor, give my body to be burned, but do not do it right. No, that's not how it goes. If I know all mysteries and can solve all mysteries and know all things and do not do it right, no. But do not have love, it means nothing. What we want our families to be is a place where respectful, loving relationships grow. So, without love, our child reacts. And again, doesn't mean that every time you do something loving, they're going to, oh, Mom, you're just the most wonderful. Dad, you are awesome. We may not get to hear that much. They may misinterpret what we do. That's why we have to decode why they didn't get that, or why they're not understanding that, or how do we work through that. Without love, a child reacts without respect. Without respect, a parent reacts without love. Think about some of the harshest things you've said as a parent. My guess is it's come in the midst of very disrespectful words, actions, or behaviors from your child. And if you would just sit and sit outside of your little situation and listen to yourself, what would your child probably feel if those words in that tone were delivered to them? Oh, my dad loves me. Oh, would you shout a little louder, Dad? Because I'm just not getting it this way. Dad, could your neck's veins bulge just a little more so I'd be sure to know how much you love me? Now, there is a place for righteous indignation. I have found, as I've reflected on my brief journey on this sod, that I very rarely have a lot of righteous indignation. My indignation tends to be a little more unrighteous. But the point being that I can say things that are right without being loving. And my kids can pick it up. Anybody here got a sarcastic sense of humor? Well, I don't want you to raise your hand, but I'll raise mine. And sometimes I just think it's tremendously funny. I just think I'm the funniest guy on the face of the earth. Like the time that this guy came to pick up my daughter and I just happened to be cleaning my shotgun. And so I just decided to ratchet that thing one time. And that's just the funniest thing you'd ever see. And my oldest daughter has not forgotten that to this day as one of her most embarrassing moments. It felt like the most unloving thing that I could do. And I was just trying to be funny. Because that's what I do. I'm funny. And what I did is I had funny at her expense. And it humiliated, embarrassed her. Now, she eventually, well, I don't know if she got completely over it, but she got over it. We talked about that in last year's classes. But without love, child reacts. Without respect, without respect, a parent reacts without love. If you're on a crazy cycle right now, I can just about guarantee you that you can find the reality of why that's happening at this particular moment in your world. You can find exactly what it is. How are they disrespecting you? It's going to be easier for you to see their disrespect than it is for you to see your lack of loving, caring behavior. And you say, well, Reggie, what do we do with all that? Come back. Next 11 weeks. This week is the 12th one. We're going to have 11 weeks. And we'll walk you through. If you want to get the book that I'm taking my resources out of with Dr. Eggers' great insights, there's a place to sign up for it over there. It'll be a resource good to have because I won't be able to give you all of the hands-on that he will. I'm going to give you a lot of hands-on stuff. How to diffuse this situation, how to address this situation, kind of how do you get there. We're going to, hopefully, you'll walk out of here with a greater grip on family dynamic and your role in it as a parent and how to address whatever it is with your kid. Do I have any questions before I let you go tonight? Any questions? Becca, do you have any question for me?
No.
Okay. But sometimes I miss stuff and I thought maybe... Okay. Everybody, anybody? Okay. Let's pray. Father, thank you for tonight. Thank you for the opportunity to think through what it means to deal with our kids, be in these families, what they need, what we need, how the thing kind of gets crazy. And Father, we don't want to live in that realm of craziness. So help us to adopt some attitudes and perspectives that will help us. Father, I pray that right now, just before we leave, that if we're kind of struggling under the mistaken impression that it's all on us and we're being crushed under the weight of that, that right now we just come and say, Lord, You're the one that has to build this house. You're the one that has to do the work. You're the one that has to guard the city. We're going to walk with You in what You do, but we're trusting You to do the heavy lifting. Father, if there's some of us here that are really kind of distressed, could we just come to You and just admit that that's what we need? Father, we may do that tonight and we may take it back tomorrow, but Father, just give us the courage to continue to come back and lay this thing in Your feet, trusting You to gain insight and wisdom to be able to go Your way. Thank You for loving us. Bless the rest of our evening, and we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.